You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Gordon Brand Jr.
And welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Brooks Koepka survives a final day scare to claim back-to-back victories at the US PGA Championship.
You knew today was going to be a tough day when it was blowing 15 or 20 on the range. You know, I left 10 feeling pretty good and left 14 not feeling so good. It can change very, very quick. You just got to hang tough, and it was nice to finish on 18. I'm just glad we didn't have to play anymore.
The American claimed his fourth major, leaving the likes of world number two Dustin Johnson trailing in his wake.
First 3 days, I didn't make enough putts. You know, I hit the ball plenty good enough to been, you know, tied with Brooks going into Sunday. You know, I just didn't make enough putts.
All the reactions have come from a sensational Sunday at Bethpage. Plus, we'll look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Made in Denmark, presented by Fraser. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined by multiple European Tour winner and Ryder Cup player Gordon Brand Jr. Gordon, how are you?
I'm very, very good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Now, you were telling me that you stayed in a hotel last night. You didn't want to drive all the way from Bristol to get here promptly. How are you feeling, fit and firing ahead of this podcast? Because I do worry about you these days. You've got bats in the barn. What are you looking at your watch for, Gordon?
I've just noticed that because you had to get the bus.
Yes, I did have to get the bus.
You know,
this is very true. I was a little bit late.
I came up in time,
yes,
you know, professional golfer, ready on time. Not like some people were going to talk about, but I was here on time. So I just can't believe I've been here 2 hours and we've only just started the programme.
Well,
so
this is what happens.
It's nothing to do with you, Dan, but where about the rest of us?
Buses can be late. David Lipsky was late, Kit, as we joined Kit Alexander. Golf presenter to talk about Bethpage and the action there. Incredible story about David Lipsky being late for his tee off time by a couple of seconds, getting counted down by all the fans. He didn't know what was going on.
Well, that's crazy. You can't imagine a professional golfer could ever be late for a tee time, but it's happened. We know Rory very nearly missed his tee time at Medina a few years ago. You would think that's your basic kind of get there beforehand, do your warm up, know when you're teeing off. A lot of the time, I guess it's the caddy's responsibility. So he might have been having a few words with his caddy for letting him slip a bit later there, perhaps.
Was he off the first or 10th?
Good question.
I don't know.
That's the thing. It often happens is when your schedule's sort of messed up because you go 10 or 1, and you schedule for 1, and you realise 10's another 10.
I think that was the case. The case was because he was on the putting green practising and just didn't realise, then suddenly realised that he had to be there, but didn't realise how close he was running to the time. The crowd were going mad. He teed off a couple of seconds late and he got a two-shot penalty. Birdied the first.
We've all got to our tee times late and felt a bit rushed and to make a birdie. I mean,
same as Woozy, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
And that incident happened because they were running late onto the tee.
Speaking of running late, and I don't want to accuse Bob Bubka of this, the original voice of golf, I think we can call Bob. Bob, how are you? Not so much late, but you had Skype problems just a few minutes ago. That's why we're kicking the podcast off late today. It's all your fault, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, it's always my fault, that's for sure. I mean, it's amazing. The more advanced technology gets, the more it doesn't work properly. I apologize. I'm late for my tee time, but we got a great foursome, so let's go.
Well, we're going to start with the action from Bethpage, New York, and it was the story of one man as Brooks Koepka, despite a last-round wobble, completed a wire-to-wire victory to take the second major of the year, the USPGA Championship. American Koepka finished on 8 under par, 2 shots ahead of compatriot Dustin Johnson, who finished 2nd on 6 under, back in tied 3rd on 2 under with 3 players, Jordan Spieth, Matt Wallace and Patrick Cantlay. Bob, it looked like it was going to be a canter for Koepka after the first 2 days. He was imperious, but there was that wobble on the back nine. What do you make just generally of his overall week?
Well, I'm going to take you gentlemen back to the U.S. Open at Shinnecock 2 days before the beginning. It was on a Tuesday. The USGA had invited all winners of USGA events to the 10th tee. They were going to put on a little exhibition. Jack Nicklaus was serving as the master of ceremonies. Brooks Koepka was there, obviously, because he had won the U.S. Open at Erin Hills the year before. There was a little time to kill. I was just standing there, and Brooks went up to Mr. Nicklaus, and he said, "Mr. Nicklaus, can I ask you something?" And Jack certainly obliged. And what Brooks asked him was, "Look, I've won a U.S. Open, but I don't want to be known as just a one-hit wonder. I just don't want to ever end my career or think about ending my career with only one major victory to my title. What advice could you give me? Jack talked to him for about 20 minutes. I think I'm going to call Jack up this morning and see if we can bottle whatever he said, because he doesn't have to worry about one. He's got four now. And when I say four, and I think, wait, Ernie Els, he won four. Rory McIlroy, he won four. Brooks Koepka is in that kind of company now. Unbelievable.
I heard Brooks talk ahead of the action, Kit, and he was asked what sort of number he thinks he might get when he comes to majors, and he was saying, I can't see any reason why I can't get to double figures. It seems incredibly cocky to say that. I mean, is he right?
I love that answer. First and foremost, I love the honesty. We're so used to pros kind of giving us the patter that they should, that the sponsors say, not putting themselves out there to be shot down later on. So I love the honesty, and this is the sort of Brooks 2.0 that we're seeing, where he's just saying what he thinks, and fair play to him. He's spoken out on Slow Play as well. But why wouldn't he make double figures? He's won four of them in eight starts. Now, of course, that can't continue or shouldn't continue unless your name's Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus, essentially. And Spieth, of course, we saw come out the blocks and then fall away, and he's not looking anywhere like his dominant best he was. So form is a fickle lady. But just looking at his game now, how he's put together, the way tournament golf is going with his course setups and the confidence he's gaining, the different ways in which he's winning these majors, it's kind of hard to look forward and see where he can't pick up one or two every sort of couple of years. And he's still just turned 29. Time is on his side. All things being equal, I would say double digits is pretty realistic.
I kept hearing one or two other players say, well, you know, Brooks is on a different level this week, Gordon. I mean, is his game so much better than everyone else's, or is it just this course this week where you had to hit it long and straight and he had the game to get the better of Beth Page, although in the end he did have that wobble, which we'll talk about in a bit. But was it just his week, his game, the course, everything just married up, do you think?
There's a lot of players that hit a long way on the tour. So it's not just that the Brooks is the exception that he can dominate a course. To be seven shots ahead with a weekend to come, there are not many people who can put that together. And he's exceptional. And we saw it at the weekend, even when he was in the heavy rough, he had the strength to gouge it out onto the green. So I think he's got some great skills. And we talk about Rory and other great players. He seems to pitch up and perform and use his skills more than any other player. And that's why he's won four out of the last eight majors.
I know you're back on the seniors tour this week. You're playing in Italy, aren't you? Is it next week you're playing? Are you tempted to get to the gym and get, you know, beefed up a little bit?
It's a bit late now, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. It's never too late.
Is that it's a week before we'll be able to go to the gym?
Well, I don't know.
Obviously, you are a commentator. Nothing to do with a primed athlete I am.
Maybe go more than once. How about that?
I'll go twice this week. And if I do well, it was Dan that said, get to the gym, do some pumping, and you're going to do well in Italy. So that's all been done. I'm nearly ready to mess up.
Okay.
I've been practicing really hard this winter, and I haven't got a clue where it's coming from. I'm certainly not going to say I'm going to win 10 tournaments in the next thing, and none of them are going to be majors, so wish me luck.
No, I always wish you luck. We're going to talk more about Brooks in just a second, but we can hear from the man himself, the US PGA champion, Brooks Koepka, who has now won four majors in his last eight appearances.
It's been so much fun these last, 2 years? It's pretty close to 2 years. It's incredible. I don't think I even thought I was going to do it that fast. I don't think anybody did. And to be standing here today with four majors is mind-blowing. Today was definitely the most satisfying out of all of them for how stressful that round was, how stressful DJ made that. That was probably definitely, I know for a fact, that was the most excited I've ever been in ever in my life right there on 18. You knew today was going to be a tough day when it was blowing 15 or 20 on the range. You know, I left 10 feeling pretty good and left 14 not feeling so good. It can change very, very quick. This golf course is, it's in the trees. You're going to, once it gets above the tree line, it could do whatever it wants, and you just got to hang tough. And it's been so enjoyable. It was nice to finish on 18. I'm just glad we didn't have to play anymore.
Well, Justin Thomas tweeted after Brooks's success, "What a win for Brooks Koepka. No reason to compare him to Tiger Woods or any of the greats. Anything. Respect this insane run he's on and applaud him for it. Congrats, bro." Eddie Pepperell said, it's official, Brooks Koepka now has more majors than I got in my first driving test. I passed my driving test on the third occasion. Kit, what about you?
Fourth time lucky for me.
Fourth time lucky? Yeah. Crikey, Gordon, I don't drive anymore, I'm useless.
I got a bad instructor, it was a third for me.
You got a bad instructor?
Yeah, it was a third. It should have been the first.
Bob, what about you and your driving test?
I was fortunate enough to pass it on the first time I took it, but don't forget, I was in a Model T. They didn't go very fast, and they were easy to handle.
Did you have some bloke running in front of it with a red flag?
Anything shy of that. But one note that I want to bring up, because it deserves a lot of credit, and that is the European Challenge Tour, which is where Brooks Koepka went to see if he had enough golf game to be a professional. I had a lovely hour yesterday with a guy by the name of Warren Botke, who was Brooks Koepka's coach from the time that Brooks was 10 until he was 17. And Warren shared with me, Brooks went over to compete on the Challenge Tour, had been over there a couple of months. He calls Warren up and he says, Warren, I don't have what it takes. I'm coming home. And Warren said, Brooks, you do have what it takes. You're not coming home. You promised you would stay the course and wait and see what happens. And then, boom, the rest is history. And a little connection to his coach, which is really fun to watch. Next time you see Brooks play, you'll see that he always takes his hand and wipes the face of his putter. He's incorporated that into his routine prior to striking a putt. And that came from learning to putt down on the greens at PGA National, only a mile or so from the PGA headquarters, where they would aerate the greens and sprinkle sand on there. So Brooks got into the habit of wiping the sand off his putter blade, and now he does it every single time. Warren just told me about this yesterday morning, and I watched him in the afternoon, obviously, and every time he wipes that putter blade, I think maybe more and more guys now are going to think, well, maybe that'll help my putting. I'll wipe that blade off also.
Bob, in the relationship of Brooks now, where do you think he can go, and how many majors do you think he's going to have when it all comes to the end for him?
Boy, that's such a great question. The more I get to know Brooks, and I spent time with him last week at the Byron Nelson out in Dallas, Texas. He is so real. He's so down to earth. I mean, he's not afraid. He breaks the mold, you know. He's free to say to the media, look, if right now I'm putting very well, so if I have an 8 or 10 footer, I fully expect to make it, and I don't see any reason why I won't make it. I mean, he says things. You guys alluded to the fact before that he proudly proclaimed that he thinks maybe 10 majors or more are in his future. You get what you get with Brooks Koepka. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. He really doesn't have even a lot of friends on the PGA Tour. Nobody dislikes him. He just likes to go and travel his own route. You know, he's probably, and without any question of a doubt, Dustin Johnson is his best friend. And Gordy, I know you're getting ready for Italy next week. Brooks Koepka, on his week off, when he's not playing on tour, spends 3 to 4 hours a day, 7 days, in the gym. I happen to know his trainer very well, a fellow by the name of Joey D that broke onto the scene by being the trainer for Vijay Singh. 3 to 4 hours a day, Jesus. 7 days when he's not playing in a tour event. That type of dedication and that kind of natural ability, when you put that combination together, guys, you got somebody that's capable of winning 4 of his last 8 majors.
Yeah, Bob, I mean that is some commitment. As we say here in Parliament, I will refer the gentleman to the question I gave some time ago. How many majors is he going to win?
Come on, Bob, how many?
Come on, give us a number.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, let's see. Tiger's won 15. Jack's won 18. I think that Brooks Koepka, because of the inflated dollars, he's already probably has enough money to last him a lifetime, and he could rest on his laurels. He'll win at least a dozen. You'll win at least
12
a dozen.
Is the mark.
12, there
that's a big number.
Higher or lower than 12? Nothing
lower,
for a pair.
Right? Lower. 11. I'm going 11.
Nothing for a pair. Nothing for a pair, not in this game.
Lower.
You reckon lower?
Lower.
So Bob goes 12, Kit goes...
10.
Going into the final round, Kit, 7 clear. And I was watching the golf on the television last night and they kept talking about turning points. And when Brooks birded the 10th, I thought that was going to be it. Done and dusted. I think at the same time, DJ had just bogeyed 11, hadn't he? And it happened within space of about sort of 5-10 minutes or so. And I thought, well, that's going to be it from here on in. But the conditions were brutal, something that we didn't see in the previous 3 days, certainly. And he went on this extraordinary stretch of 4 bogeys on the spin.
Yeah, that wind getting up just showed what was possible and what the players were expecting and where the scoring would have been if you'd have had that for 4 days. And just, you start missing fairways around there, that is it. He was bombing it out there. But yes, he's massive and the distance took a lot of players out of it. But he was straight as well. And when he stopped being straight for just those few holes on the back nine, it showed you can't, even he can't muscle it to every green. He did on some. You're going to drop shots. I've been kind of racking my brain since it happened last night with whether I think, you know, that those inevitable words of choking and bottling kind of emerged, and the fans were certainly chucking that at him on the course as well. And I've been trying to rack my brains as to whether I think that he did. Can you say someone that won choked or bottled it,
can.
Or was he trying to?
I think
to?
You can.
I don't know if he,
I don't know if he did, but I think you can, generally.
I think you've got to look at it as the full 72-hole piece, the body of work. And he did the hard work early to allow himself to have the inevitable bad holes around a course like that that everyone was going to have. Yes, they all came in a very short space of time. Yes, they all came in the back nine on Sunday. But at the end of the day, he still walked away with a 2-shot win and the trophy.
I mean, we're talking about people bottling it, and we shouldn't sort of go on about it too much in this case, but DJ gets to within one by birdieing 15 and then bogeys the next two.
Yeah, I mean, Brooks said how excited he was out there on the golf course. I'm not sure if excitement was the word, as in, this is getting to me, it's getting my attention, really. It's really difficult to close out a tournament. I know he's done it 3 times before in majors.
Fans are on DJ's side as well, weren't they?
And closed it out. And as you say, you know, maybe not everyone's calling. Johnson's going well. It's just the gap was just closing all the time, but it was almost destiny that he had such a big lead. It couldn't go in one man's favour all day.
8-time European Tour winner, were you in a situation like that? Was someone snapping at your heels? Were you starting to leak it left or right in any of your wins and got it back together or didn't win when you were in a situation like that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, sometimes it's like you're knocking at the door sometimes, and sometimes the door opens and other times it closes. You've made mistakes and you've snatched tournaments as well. You know, I can remember the Scandinavian Open that Ronan Rafferty and...
Did you win that one in the playoff?
I went in the playoff in the end.
Is that the most pressure you felt in situations like
that? No. I was going to say that the group behind me, the leaders, as in such, you know, imploded, really. 77, 75, all I had to do was shoot 71, you know, and take them over. So the door opened for me there in one case. But then in the case of the Benson Hedges, I made eagle on the last to win the tournament from another player who just lipped out for eagle. So I don't think there's... I don't think you choke. I think things happen that maybe someone is just better you than you going down the stretch.
Just one last one on pressure before I bring Bob back in. Is there more pressure in a Ryder Cup when you're playing for teammates?
There is.
Is that like elevated, like, sort of off the charts?
Yes, because everybody's looking at you. It's a single match. It's a point or nothing. No second is no good whatsoever. So it can, and then especially on Sunday when maybe the match is coming down to you and all that work, it's a horrendous situation.
Bob, were you always confident that he was going to win, or do you think, crikey, this one's going to slip away and DJ's going to pinch it?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and what we have to do, and I think it's been lost in the fact that he hoisted the trophy on Sunday. But look back to what he did on Thursday, playing with Tiger Woods, who had just won the Masters, playing with the champion golfer of the year, Francisco Molinari. He's playing on a probably one of the toughest, if not toughest, golf courses in all of America. And he goes out and shoots a 63, a new course record here at Bethpage Black. he follows that up on Friday, and he's at 12 under par after two rounds. Nobody's ever been 12 under par after two rounds in a major championship. So he built in the cushion. He admitted that he was half choking. You know, if you make four bogeys in a row, matter of fact, he even said he can't even remember the last time he's ever made four bogeys in a row. But boy, when you know, it's a 72 hole event. If you do enough great work in your first 36, you make the last 36 rather easy. And I think this is what came into play. His greatness for the first 2 days allowed him to slip a little, wobble a little on Sunday, but still have enough of a cushion to get the job done.
So we sort of on the opinion that we all think he was going to win anyway. He's built that into his round, as you were suggesting earlier, Kit.
Yeah, seven shots was just too much. You could see him going out there and having a toughish day, but also with the conditions, no one was going out there and shooting 65, 66. I think 68 was the lowest round on the final day. There just wasn't enough give and take between someone catching and him going back possible.
Nobody's surrendered such a big lead in the major.
Not in
a
major, no. Never been done before.
I wouldn't say surrender, but lost, you know, whichever
but that
way.
That comes with its own pressure.
Of course it does.
Known that in the middle of that back nine, and with the fans chanting DJ, no one wants to go down like that.
He won it, though. We forgot.
DJ was second, finished running up now in every single major. No. What is DJ destined to become? A nearly man? Only one major on his name?
You're just never quite convinced, are you? He's done a good job of reversing the kind of reputation he had early in his career as someone who struggled to close. He had the issues at Whistling Straits, at Pebble Beach when he held a good lead going in. He'd always had those question marks, and his incredible play over the last 3 or 4 years, you've kind of almost forgotten about that, but there are still question marks over him. I would be more confident with Brooks Koepka going down the back nine than I would with DJ, for sure, even if they were starting level, let alone with the advantage that Brooks had.
Well, DJ admitted that he left it with too much to do on the final day.
I'm very pleased with the way I played. I feel like my game's been pretty good all year. You know, this week especially, I felt like I really, really played well tee to green. You know, the first 3 days, I didn't make enough putts. You know, I hit the ball plenty good enough to, you know, to been, you know, tied with Brooks going into Sunday. You know, I just didn't make enough putts. Today, I felt like I rolled the putter a lot better. You know, in these tough conditions, tough wind, you know, even the putts that I missed, you know, looked like they were going in. Hit the ball really well again today, too. So I'm pleased with where the game's at, you know, especially we got a, you know, still got a lot of big tournaments left this year. So I'm very happy with that.
Bob, do you think DJ and Brooks are spurring each other on at the moment? We believe they're good friends, gym buddies off the course. Are they, you know, trying to get one over each other all the time?
Yeah, I think there's a little friendly rivalry between the two. But one other thing that we have to take note of, you know, leaving Bethpage last night, the golf world has a new number one player, and it's Brooks Koepka. I mean, and Gordy and all you guys know it takes a collective body of effort to get to number one. You know, many will argue that the system is not even, you know, indicative of who is the best player. But certainly in this case, he is now the number one player in the world, winner of 4 of 8. I mean, the accolades just continue with this guy. But he has two ingredients that I really admire. He has a tremendous inner confidence. He'll tell you exactly how he feels. And he has a work ethic that is to die for. I mean, he's a hard, hard worker. Doesn't take anything for granted. And probably the biggest compliment that I could pay Brooks Koepka is that if I found myself in a back alley full of strangers and I didn't know where I was, I'd love one guy from the PGA Tour to be with me, and that guy would be Brooks Koepka. He's that tough.
Yeah, you want him in the trenches with you, no doubt about that. None of them, DJ or Brooks, Gordy, overcomplicate the game. They keep it simple. Is that a good trait to have when you're a golfer?
Well,
they're not deep thinkers of the game, are they?
We think that. You know, it's amazing what you hear from pros of their preparation and what they actually don't tell us. And that I think they're quite right, is sharing their little secrets sometimes. And when Bob says that he's a great worker, it's not just alluding to the fact that he trains in the gym and he works hard on his game, there will be other aspects. And I'm sure his mindset just doesn't come as a natural occurrence. I'm sure there is, the mindset is driven by what he wants to do. And that's not just like, I want to win some majors. He will do work on that. So I think in the way of you say, oh, it looks like they're casual, just playing, but there's much more depth than that.
Just one final one on DJ to everyone. He is 34 years old. He's got one major championship. Bob, I'll come to you first with this one. You gave the number of 12 for Brooks eventually. Give us a number for DJ's major haul at the end of his career.
I think he's going to end up with, three or four. I mean, he's too talented. And one last thought, I just remembered this, and I think it's quite telling it in a lot of subtle ways. Talk about having your priorities straight. Walking into the clubhouse at Bethpage Black yesterday, knowing that he had 18 holes to play to win back-to-back PGA championships, model-like girlfriend walking alongside tried to give him a little kiss.
Twice.
He shunned her away.
Yes, he did.
He did not want to do that prior to the round. After the round, when he won the trophy, he gave her a nice kiss. That's a guy that has his priorities in the proper order.
So 3-4 for DJ.
I think Bob's spot on with that.
We wouldn't have said this 12 months ago, 18 months ago. We'd be saying 6 or 7.
I'm going 2. I think maybe one more.
I'm going 6.
I'm not going to question the ability. I just question, A, a little bit the mentality, and B, how many other good players there are coming through.
I think he's sorted that out a bit, the mentality of losing at the weekend. And as you see, he's chased Brooks down there. I think,
yeah, I think
3 or 4 is a fair number.
Sense. Got Pebble Beach coming up, obviously. He likes that.
Is this another sweepstake that we're doing?
Yeah.
We come back to this in a few years.
We'll see what happens. Let's move on to England's Matt Wallace, who showed really good consistency over the course of the week, finishing tied third, his best finish at a major. And for a player that has come from nowhere, really, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, he was playing, was he playing on the Alps Tour, I think, Kit? Was he? He's winning a lot, but the rise, the trajectory is still continuing on the same path.
Absolutely. I love to see this. I mean, I work on the Euro Pro Tour, so that's the same level as the Alps Tour, that third tier feeding in to the Challenge Tour and the European Tour. He won 6 times in that season, I think, a few years back. And winning is winning. It's amazing to see him kick on and carry on. You don't normally see someone, every time they get to a new level, just carry on so easily and seem to just belong there. And it's a mentality thing for him. We've seen he's fiery on the course, almost in the Tyrrell Hatton kind of ballpark of wearing his heart on his sleeve, showing a little bit of frustration, as he did on the 18th green at Hillside the week before the USPGA when he let that one slip. But I think that's also his biggest weapon, that winning mentality, that never-say-die attitude. The amount of times you cut to him during the coverage and he was rolling in 10, 15, 20 footers for par over the weekend, that is massive. You had to do it on that course. And that shows the mindset of a man that's never, ever going to give up. Won 3 times last year. I questioned whether he should be in the Ryder Cup last year when a lot of people were calling for it.
He was gutted to miss out, wasn't he?
He was gutted to it. I have to admit, I was in the boat that said I think it was a little bit too soon for him. 12 months, well, we're not even 12 months later. We're now sort of 6-7 months later. And if there was another Ryder Cup at the end of this year, you'd say it's absolutely not too soon. He should be there without a shadow of a doubt. And I think he will be there for years to come, because not only is he going to keep winning tournaments and performing big in the majors with that mentality, it's going to stand him in great stead for something like the Ryder Cup as well.
It's all about attitude, I think, isn't it, Gordy, with Matt? I mean, we've had him on the show a few times and he is hugely driven. Ryder Cup disappointment. He just gets back on the golf course. I think the first thing he did after missing out or maybe watching the Ryder Cup last year, he was straight on the range because he thought, I've got to be involved next time around. I mean, he's a driven character and hugely talented for a player that I think was in college golf, wasn't he, in the States, only had a year there and then decided to come back, didn't know what he was going to do, but phenomenal talent.
Yeah, I think the disappointment for him of Ryder Cup non-selection was maybe a drive forward for him, as in, I'm going to show you, mate, that I am the guy that you're missing at the Ryder Cup, and I'm going to keep on performing, make it impossible for you not to pick me for the next Ryder Cup. And, you know, he's third at the USPGA, second the week before, as you say. He was gutted that he doesn't win. And I think when you it's not when you finish, oh, well, I let it slip in hard luck and there's always next week. You know, you've got to show your emotion that really, really hurt that you didn't win, because you don't get very many opportunities to win out there. You win 10 tournaments in your career and you've played 500 events. There's an awful lot of disappointment out there, so you've got to grab the opportunity. But Matt Wallace is the future.
No doubt about that. Well, he stepped up on a tough course and certainly tough weather as well. He gave this assessment of the conditions that the players faced on that final day.
I don't think many people understand how hard it is. I mean, I hit a drive down 16 and I flushed it, and it must have gone about 250 yards downhill. So there's gusts, there's winds that are changing direction, and it's brutal. I mean, to finish behind Brooks and DJ in what is my sixth or seventh major, that's pretty good. And there's plenty more things that I want to accomplish, and hopefully I can do that in a couple of weeks' time. But put myself in these positions more and more, and I'll learn, and I'm learning fast. So in the space of 5 years or so, I've gone from absolutely nothing to finishing third at a major, so that's quite nice.
He kept it simple on Twitter afterwards by tweeting, "Thank you, Bethpage, T3. Only the top six finished the tournament under par. Bob, when we look back at Bethpage, we were always told it was going to be a beast. And then when Brooks does what he did for the first 2 days, you start to think, oh, it can't be that hard. But I think the final day once again showed us how difficult the course can play.
It really can. And if you want a better example, we were eyewitness yesterday, which I think is a record. The greatest spending spree in the history of professional golf. And I'm referring to Harold Varner III, who teed off in second place in the final twosome. If he finished second, he was going to earn well over $1 million. He drops all the way down to 36th after shooting an 81, collects, I think, somewhere around $36,000. So Harold Varner spent over $1 million in one round of golf. I mean, that's a record that probably will never be broken.
That's a nasty hit.
That's a hell of a green fee, isn't it, Bob? Hell of a green fee.
That is a nasty one.
I thought it was a municipal golf course. They didn't charge that for green fees up there, do they, Bob?
I thought it was $30 a round, not a million, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, he certainly paid the price. And you know, the beauty of Bethpage, and I don't know if you guys have even heard the story. You know, they have that famous sign on the first hole, alerting players to how difficult this golf course really is. And the origin, it came to be back around 1980. It was a Memorial Day weekend. A husband decided he was going to teach his wife how to play golf. They signed up. They got two starting times. They went out on the golf course. She had never even hit a golf ball before. Well, after four holes, there were seven or eight holes open ahead of them. There was a group of very talented Asian players playing behind them, and they started hitting into this couple. The husband got irate. He started hitting their balls back at them. I mean, a real fracas had broken out at Bethpage Black before people from the pro shop came out, assessed the situation, and said that they were going to refund the money for the husband and wife, and they were taken off the golf course. And at that point, someone came up with the idea, I think we better put up a sign alerting people how tough this is, so that nobody just decides they're going to go out and use Bethpage Black as a place to learn to play the game.
Should Tiger Woods have taken heed of that side, do you think, Bob? Because he missed the cut. What do you make of Tiger's performance over the 2 days? Was he injured? Was he fully fit? Should he have played between the Masters and the PGA? Give us your thoughts.
Boy, I'm going to go way out on a limb on this one. I've been with Tiger for all 15 of his majors. When I started getting reports that Tiger was not going to tee it up prior to coming here to Bethpage, and the reason given was that he said he didn't have the energy. He still was recovering from the Masters. I think in majors, Tiger now is done and dusted. He may show up at Augusta every year for the next 4 or 5 years and potentially make a run because he knows that golf course. He really didn't play that great in winning the Masters. He hit a lot of errant shots that were not penalized. He had the massive break where, you know, four of his nearest competitors put it in the water at 12. He had the motivation of having his children there that had never been to Augusta before. He had the motivation of everybody in the world saying that he was never going to win another major. He put all of that effort into getting that 15th major, and I congratulate him for it. I just don't know if we're going to see him contend anymore in majors other than possibly down at Augusta.
Well, Bob, I have to agree with you regarding the Masters. He had everything going for him. Four drives, two on 10, two on 13. He walks off, I think, something like one or two under par. Brooks Koepka doesn't make two putts on 17 and 16. Molinari comes back in three over. It just seemed to fall in his lap, that tournament. But we've been talking for 2.5 years. We're never going to see Tiger as we've seen him before. I cannot believe that he is not going to contend seriously for a major in the next 4 years. We can't discount him at all. You've made a massive statement saying he's done and dusted.
Get your thoughts before we come back to Bob.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Gordy. To say he's done and dusted, I think, is... I mean, it's a bold statement, but one I can't quite see happening because he is always going to contend at Augusta. And yes, we say that it kind of came to him there and it was the 15th major and maybe it was all written and it was just something in the stars. But how often do we say that a tournament just came to someone? You know, the luckiest guy normally wins. You don't win golf tournaments by being unlucky. You don't win them by things not going your way. And generally, when Tiger gets himself into contention, things magically seem to go his way a lot of the time. And of course, there's the fact that it's the Tiger Woods aura for all he's been through. When he got into contention on that leaderboard, how much of it was the guys around him seeing his name there and that forcing the mistakes that we've mentioned? I think he's got enough golf left in him in probably the next 4 or 5 years. I think it will have to be anything longer than that's ambitious, I think, to say that he will at least get a shot in each of those Masters, you would have to think. And there's going to be courses at the other majors that suit him as well. He's always going to be a danger at an Open, especially if the wind gets up and it becomes a real sort of ball strikers suited golf course. Yes, he was undercooked coming in this week. There's no doubt about it. It was tired. It took a lot out of him. He hadn't teed it up. I think we saw what a mistake that can be, not playing enough golf, from someone like Justin Rose going into the Masters. And he admitted afterwards, you need to have your game competition ready and at the highest level because there's just too many guys that are too good and these courses are too difficult at that level to not be fully 100% prepared going into a major, and Tiger wasn't this time.
I think that's going to have to be his trait because he is 42 and we know what he's been through. He's got to be completely ready, but not in match fitness, in actually himself and how he feels. Before he can swing a golf club and feel he can get it around the golf course.
I understand what both of you are saying. I'm actually sort of coming around to the way Bob's thinking, because, Bob, even when you look back at the Tour Championship win, I mean, it's limited field. Masters is limited field. I mean, how many players you're actually beating there, do you know what I mean? And also, Bob, the rejigging of the schedule with the PGA now in May, that's not going to do him any favours, is it?
No, you bring up a good point. I mean, it's rapid fire. You know, he's going to play, obviously, in the Players' Championship in March, try and get ready for the Masters, April, you know, May, PGA, June, U.S. Open, July, the Open Championship. One little nugget for, you guys probably know this, but there may be listeners that may be wanting to get a little edge on who's going to win the Open Championship when we get to Port Rush. Well, it just happens that Ricky Elliott, the longtime caddy of Brooks Koepka, grew up on Port Rush, knows every blade of grass. So can you imagine the combination of having Brooks Koepka's talent with a caddy that's going to be better prepared than any other caddy that shows up for the Open Championship? It just seems like the golfing gods are smiling down right now on Brooks Koepka. And everything I said about Tiger is predicated on the medical side of Tiger. Mentally, yes, he's tough enough, but I'm not so certain that having your back, you know, a fusion on your back is going to allow him to really be competitive for, you know, any more majors. So I hope I'm wrong. I really do. You guys made me feel very comfortable. You sound like I was talking to my wife. She never agreed with anything I ever said. So for you guys to do that, it did make me feel like I was at home.
Just one last word on the physicality of Tiger and how ready he's going to be. You know, from someone that we're used to seeing as an absolute machine, he did marine training, he was always the fittest guy on a golf course at any time. The videos we've seen, like the week immediately after when he won in Augusta, and he looked stiff, he looked creaky, he looked uncomfortable, it immediately reminded me of the Ryder Cup last year, where I was sat in the press conference 6 feet directly opposite from him in the front row. He was sat right on the end, and he could genuinely barely keep his eyes open. He was a spent force physically and mentally at the end of that week. Now, he played, I think, what was it, 8 of the previous 10 weeks, and he had taken it out of him. And you're absolutely right, Gordy. He has to build it so that he's prepared physically. He can't do the schedule that most other guys are going to do, and that's going to make it tougher for him to get into a position where he can win. But I think there will be a handful of times he does it.
Rory McIlroy, we've been talking about numbers throughout this podcast today. It's 5 years since he's won one, Gordy. What's going on with Rory? I mean, we talked about him briefly, but, I mean, should we get concerned about Rory?
Well, for me, he underperforms because we know how...
But when does an underperformance become his performance? Yeah.
No, can I finish?
You can try.
He underperforms for me because we know what he's got in the bag. And he has the ability of doing a Brooks, winning a tournament, easy peasy, 7 shots or so, or getting in that position. And he just doesn't seem to do it enough for me. And although he's squeezed in backdoor as a top 10, you would hope, and you know, the Masters is just should be right up his street. Hits it a long way, hits it high. Maybe hasn't got, seemed to be the short game for Augusta, which is very tight for him. But he should be there more often. So for me, he underperforms because he is a potential unbelievable superstar. He is a superstar. He's won 4 majors. But I'm just saying, I would have thought that number should have been 6 or 7 by now. He is that good.
But it's not. And it's not. The performances are coming, you know, same every single major, it seems to me anyway. I mean, I know he's won the Players. I know he's, you know, he keeps on grabbing a win, doesn't he? He's won a season last few years. But not the dominant force that we thought he was going to be. And at some stage, you know, you say, well, that's him now. That's not the way it's going to be.
I've said it before and I'll say it again, the most frustrating golfer to witness and to watch in world golf right now because, as you say, Gordy, you know exactly what he's capable of. You know, there's that old adage of if they've got their A game, who's the best in the planet, on the planet? Rory is probably, OK, Brooks maybe now, I've just gone past him, but you'd say Rory and Brooks at the moment, if they've got their A game, are the best two on the planet. The fact of the matter is he's not quite bringing it enough and he does win every so often, so you can never truly write him off and say, oh, he's in a bad patch, or he's gone, or he's never going to win again. But he's just streaky. And until he finds something to just... And I don't know what it is, whether it is... There's been question marks over the caddy. There's been question marks over his commitment. Is he just a little bit too happy and contented with life? That there isn't that burning desire and that, do you know what, I'm going to show you mentality that Brooks certainly has. It feels to me like there's just a tiny element missing, and it's 0.1%. And it feels so harsh to criticise someone like Rory. But when you look at what other guys are doing and what he should be doing, you know, he could turn around and win 3 or 4 times this year in a couple of the majors and make me look very silly. But I just want there to be something more.
Bob, 4 at the minute. What's the number? What's your thoughts on Rory's career from here on in since we're doing this?
You know, the amazing thing, I feel very confident that if we took a poll of everybody playing, well, let's say everybody that played in the PGA Championship this year. And the question was, who has the most talent to play this game of golf that's in this field? I think that Rory's name would be mentioned more than any other player's name. That's the frustrating part. We all know the extreme talent of Rory McIlroy. I remember him at Carnoustie as a 16-year-old on a Thursday playing as an amateur. He was the only guy that didn't make a bogey that day. And at that point, I knew I was dealing with something extremely rare. If I knew the answer to Rory's problems, I guarantee you I could say, to Rory, full confidence. Look, I have the answer for you. I need a $5 million check. That thing would be in my pocket so fast, make your head spin. Rory doesn't know what's wrong with Rory, and that's the worst type of problem that you can have. But I think he's still too good, and I think he gets it rolling in the right direction. He's going to pick up two, three, maybe, at least three more majors.
At least three, seven. Let's get some numbers. Kit, how many? You got four at the minute, seven, you're saying seven?
I was going seven as well, to be honest.
I think you're spot on there, Bob. You're seven. Spot on, yeah. So we're agreeing with you for once.
I'll go one more. What's the definition of madness? Doing the same thing and expecting a different result. See, we have the same conversation after every single major, or we have done recently anyway.
The one thing with Rory is you see, and you see some of the great players around him, he flitters away shots. I mean, round greens, yeah, a poor chip, where if you put a Spieth or you put a Kupka in that place, they would get up and down. And he has these little spells in a tournament that it all goes a bit pear-shaped, and you think, well, you're potentially one of the greatest golfers we're ever seeing, and there's little shots that are badly played or badly misjudged, and that takes him you only need one or two of those times in a golf tournament that just take you away from being great.
We mentioned Portrush before, 61 course record held by Rory McIlroy. He'll be well supported, certainly, for the Open. One or two other points of order. Bob, I'm sure you were across this story, weren't you? Jaz Janawatanand and his new caddy for the week. Bob, this New Yorker, I don't think any of them could understand each other, but they seem to get it going. A fantastic performance from Jaz, and indeed his caddy, whose name escapes me, Jake Miller.
For a while, guys, on Saturday, I thought I had done something drastically wrong, and I was being penalized, and that was because I had Brooks Koepka running away with this thing, so every other sentence had to have Brooks Koepka's name, and then lo and behold, I see who creeps up into second place, and I didn't want to believe it. I look at the name, and it's Jaz Jadawanda, and I said, please. You know, I never root for anybody to do bad, but I have to be honest, a bogey or two by Jaz was not going to be the worst thing.
And do you know what? And I think I just got his name wrong as well. So we're going to have to try and get it right between us. Bob's had a go. Come on, we need the right pronunciation here. Kit, embarrass us all. Get it right.
Jaz Janawatanand.
Oh,
there's an extra bit. You just say one more than you think you should, than you think's acceptable.
One more nanu.
An extra nanu.
Yeah.
But don't go nanu nanu. That's too many. Now. Okay. Yeah. Just the next.
Caddy story is fantastic. Jake Miller was on his back. And if you want a local caddy, Bethpage is where it would really pay dividends, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it at events before. Matt Kuchar, famously earlier this year, getting his local caddy and perhaps not giving him his fair dues. I'm sure Jazz's man got a nice little chunk. But yeah, I think it can be really good, especially for a young guy going to a course that they've not going to have played before. And probably in America, Jaz hasn't played a lot of golf over on that side of the Atlantic. So conditions as well, and grasses and that kind of thing, just getting someone with a bit of local knowledge, I think can be massive. We still see it every now and then at Augusta as well, to understand those greens. And it obviously worked for him. He faded away a bit, and that was really, really sad to see, actually, because I think he deserved to at least get a top 10 the way he handled himself throughout the week. But a massive learning experience for him nonetheless.
Bob, I'm just going to give you a few names here. Give us your thoughts on as many as you like, or as few as you like, those that missed the cut, the notables that we expected a little bit more from, the likes of John Rahm, Sergio Garcia, Bubba Watson, Ian Poulter, Bryson DeChambeau. Any stories around any of the six I've mentioned there? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, my thoughts on that six prior to the start of the event, if you were to tell me that any one of those six was going to win, I wouldn't have been overly surprised. I mean, that's how talented they are, and that's how much respect I have for their games. Probably the fact that they all missed the cut is just incredible. But people have no idea how difficult this golf course really is. And sometimes it's just a matter of a foot or two in one direction or another, and it makes all the difference in the world. I talked to Kerry Haig, who's renowned for setting up golf courses, and my question to him was, Kerry, did you see a 63 on Thursday? And he paused for a minute, and he said the following. He said, we had unusual amount of rain leading up to the event. The greens were soft. The greens were in absolute perfect condition as far as putting, but they were very receptive. The fairways were soft. Balls were not going to roll into the rough and have probable problem shots. And he says, under those conditions, with the best players in the world, yes, I did see maybe a 63. So a very accurate assessment of the course setup and some indication of, you know, why a 63 could be, you know, posted on a golf course that had the reputation of being extremely difficult. Everything went in the players' favor. There was no wind on Thursday either. So everything was on the players' side to shoot low. Obviously, Brooks Koepka took full advantage of that and posted that record-setting 63.
One player, Kit, that maybe wasn't a surprise you were just pointing out to me, Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, I believe that's now sixth missed cut on the bounce in majors for Sergio, which is incredible to think of, really. You know, he was so steady in them for so long, even before winning at the Masters. He seemed to be a perennial sort of top 10, top 20 guy in the majors and was always there or thereabouts. He's at a real sort of turning point in his career now. He's had the controversies again at the beginning of the year in Saudi Arabia. He's been questioned by some of his fellow pros. Brooks Koepka, in fact, one of them that came out and said he probably needed to grow up a bit at the age of 40. So now where his career goes from here as a Ryder Cup record points holder with one major in the bag and still buckets of talent and time on his hands, I think watching his career trajectory over the next few years could be really intriguing.
Bob, one final one from you before we let you go. Was it a success in terms of the course, the player who won it, and of course the change in the calendar as well? What's your abiding memories of this year's USPGA?
I think the move to May was very well received and certainly improves the cadence of the majors. The winner, he speaks for himself. I mean, a defending champion goes on to win. You can't fault that. The crowds were unbelievable, up to 60,000 on occasion. Disappointment level, obviously, with the absence of Tiger Woods on the weekend. But overall, I think this 101st playing of the PGA is quite remarkable. And even more remarkable to me is it's now been over 100 years since a player from England has won the PGA Championship. When I consider all the greats that have played the game in that past 100 years, for one not to have won a PGA Championship, I think is truly remarkable. And I think that streak is going to come to an end rather soon.
Let's hope so. Bob, thanks for coming on the Race to Dubai show. We will speak again soon.
Loved it, guys. Thanks for having me. And on to the US Open at Pebble Beach.
Well, many thanks to Bob Bubka, and we'll, of course, speak to him over the course of the summer on the show. Now, the top 10 from the USPGA Championship reads something like this. In tied eighth, we had Matt Kuchar, Shane Lowry, Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, Erik van Rooyen, and Gary Woodland. So that incorporates 10th place, obviously. In seventh position, Sung-hoon Kang. In sixth, Luke List. Third, as we know, Matt Wallace, the top European. Jordan Spieth finding a little bit of form on the green, certainly. Not so much with his driver or indeed his iron play. Strokes gained putting stats were phenomenal at Bethpage, but a return to form of sorts certainly for the major champion. He was third alongside Patrick Cantlay. Second, as we know, Dustin Johnson, but the winner of the 2019 USPGA Championship at Bethpage State Park Black Course was Brooks Koepka. Now, the selections from last week. We get two picks, and although usually one has to be outside of the top 50 because it was a major, we don't implement that particular rule. So it was basically one European and one from elsewhere. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a miscut. I went for Rory McIlroy after saying that he could only win one more major earlier in the show. He was tied 8th. And I went for Scott Piercy because I saw him play the night before. A bit of recency bias there. He was 41st. Jamie Spence, Gordy, went for Brooks Koepka. He's good at stuff like this, isn't he, Jamie?
Well, he's good with the first pick anyway.
Yeah, second was John Rahm, who missed the cut. And Matt Cooper, who was our journalist guest last week, went for Xander Schauffele and Lucas Bjerregaard, who both tied for 16. That's pretty good from Matt.
That's very good.
So 5 points for me, 15 for Jamie, 10 for the other guests, or the guests, as we like to call it. It's strange, isn't it, Kit, because ahead of the tournament last week, Brooks Koepka was not one of the favourites. I say not one of the favourites. I think he was about sort of sixth or seventh favourite, wasn't he?
He came in pretty short. By the time they teed off on Thursday, he was second favourite, I think. So I think perhaps people saw early in the week, if he was a touch longer odds out at sort of 14, 16 in some places, there was a lot of value to be had there, piled on. And I think by the time they teed off,
who was the favourite in the end? Was Rory favourite? Tiger favourite?
I think DJ was favourite. Brooks second. So it kind of went with what you'd expect. But maybe the fact that he didn't have a win this calendar year was just acting against him a touch. Obviously,
that was one of the trends, I think, wasn't it?
You kind of look for someone to have got a win under their belt going into a major that season. It doesn't often happen that someone comes out who hasn't already got a trophy and gets a win. But then Brooks Koepka is his own unique beast these days.
No doubt about that. Presenters on 160, co-presenters up to 75, guests up to 30. Still myself and Rob leading the way. And make sure you tell that, Rob, when you see him next, Gordy.
I will.
Good. In the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, George's dream team scored the most points from the USPGA Championship, while Stephen Swan remains top of the overall standings. If you want to get involved, you can do by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Now then, rankings. Race to Dubai, first and foremost. Let's do the top 10 here from 10 to 1. Xander Schauffele stays in 10. David Lipsky, 9. Li Haotong, 8. Ian Poulter, 7th. Louis Oosthuizen, 6. Justin Harding, what a season he's having. The South African in 5th. Jorge Campillo, ultra consistent on the European Tour in 4th. Shane Lowry, recovered from a bad start to go really well at Bethpage in 3rd. Matt Wallace, we know, tied 3rd. Top European in the USPGA Championship in 2nd. And Kevin Kisner tops the rankings, the American, having played 5 tournaments. Sure to be changes over the course of the summer, you would have thought. As for the top 10, Ricky Fowler is in 10th position. Xander Schauffele played well at Bethpage in 9th. Bryson DeChambeau missed the cut, unfortunately. Bryson in 8th. Francesco Molinari, not the tournament that he would have wanted or hoped for, certainly in 7th. Tiger Woods, 6th. Justin Thomas, of course, didn't play because of a wrist injury. A former USPGA champion, of course, but remains in 5th place. Rory McIlroy is in 4th. Justin Rose slips a position, down from 2nd to 3rd. Dustin Johnson also slips a position. Was the world number one, but only 2nd in New York, so now 2nd in the world rankings. And we do have a new world number one. It is Brooks Koepka. Time to look ahead to the next tournament on the European Tour, the Made in Denmark, presented by Fraser. Matt Wallace, the defending champion, played earlier in the schedule this year. Previously, it was the end of August, the start of September. I still think the crowds are going to be great because, Kit, we've seen this in the past. They come to Himalayan Golf and Spa in their thousands. I don't want to say it's exactly like the Phoenix Open on the PGA Tour, but there's an element of that with that par 3 16th hole as well. But it just looks good on television. The players seem to enjoy it. One that has become very quickly one of the sort of must-see on the European Tour, I think.
It's one of the most popular venues already, and I think if there was a little bit of a bigger purse, you'd get a really strong field there, actually, because it is a fun, scorable course, and the fans turn out in their droves. As you mentioned, the back of that 16th, a bit like Scottsdale, you've got the amphitheatre around that short par 3. We've seen plenty of holes in one there in the past. You'd bet your bottom dollar you'll see another one this week. They like to put the pins in places where it all feeds in off the slopes. And my word, do those 3,500 fans that pack that hill behind it go absolutely crazy when they see a good shot in there.
We've seen the European Tour over the last few months, and it's always been the same in recent times, Gordon, you know, play out in China and Morocco and the Far East. And there's some really good events, obviously, in the Middle East. And we enjoy some of the places that come to. But when you get one of these, like a little bit like Hillside as well, the British Masters, a load of fans there really enjoying the golf, making it great for the players. The players really enjoy it, don't they?
Well, I think that's tremendous. It's always nice when you can engage with the locals as such, because it makes you engage with them as well, and it seems to create a fun atmosphere. You always want to give back to them as well. The course is quite scorable. It's a shortish course. But, I mean, going to Denmark, I've done that before and played in Sweden just up the road. They are keen, mad keen golfers, and they come out in their droves to support and they seem to enjoy seeing people play golf. It really is a fun atmosphere when you go there.
Did you remember last year, was it Thomas Bjorn? He was playing his 500th European Tour event. They all wore the Thomas Bjorn mask, didn't they, around that? And they all serenaded him with, "You'll never walk alone, you can't have everything," I suppose. He's a Liverpool fan, but bless him. There you go, let's hope they get beaten next week. However, it is one of those events that obviously the players like. In terms of the field, we've got Matt Wallace defending. If he wasn't the defending champion, Kit, do we think he would have been playing this week off the back of, you know, playing at Bethpage and playing well? I mean, credit to him that he's going to be teeing up in Denmark, because it's not going to be easy. Not necessarily the travel, but just the fact that he was sort of in the mix and it was a brutal test, you know?
On the face of it, you'd say no, but actually, just looking down the field, there are quite a lot of guys who are making the trip over from the US PGA to play. I mean, just looking here, you've got Westwood, Olesen, Campillo, Kitayama, Bjerregaard. You know, you can go on, Wallace himself, of course. Loads of guys that played last week in the US PGA are making the trip across. And I think that is testament to the strength and popularity of the course and the event that there are those guys making that effort. Because, like you say, it would be very easy to have this week off, maybe play once or twice again in the lead up to the US Open if you're going there. The way this concertina kind of summer of majors is going, tournaments are going to suffer, but it doesn't seem like the Made in Denmark is one of those.
It's not necessarily what the fund is. As a pro over the years, you tend to go back to a venue that you found that is exciting and is enjoyable. And it's not relevant how much money it is. It's where you think, I can have a nice time there, I can perform. And that has got to do with the reception you receive when you get there.
Silkeborg, of course, last year, where Thomas Bjorn got that reception rather than Himmelen, just to point that out. In terms of home players, Gordon, obviously Torbjørn Olesen, Lukas Bjerregaard is the more... We talk about this a lot. I'm not quite sure if it's a thing. Is there more pressure playing in front of home galleries, or do you draw from it? I mean, when you played in front of, you know, fans that you... your courses that you played before, or home tracks that you knew well and you knew that you were going to have a lot of support, did it affect you one way or another?
I just think it's a plus-plus, really. It is very nice that you realise people are trying to support you, want you to win your home Open, which would have been the Scottish Open for me. So these guys, they look at it as their second major, really. You know, other than the British Open, it's the one they want to win in front of their home fans, being cheered down the last holes by locals. And so it becomes inspiring for them. I don't think it's a burden.
Any others that we should mention in dispatches, Kit, before we get to our selections here? We've got Victor Dubuisson playing, we've got Lee Westwood playing as well. One or two players that have been on leaderboards over the last sort of month, 6 weeks or so, that always seem to be up in the van. Campillo, you mentioned before, he's had a great season. Jordan Smith as well. Mike Lorenzo Vera played in the PGA, didn't he, last week? You know, good, strong, you know, regular sort of European Tour feel to this one in terms of the field, isn't there?
Well, the enigma Dubuisson is one that absolutely stands out.
Is he coming back a little bit, do you
think? He's coming back. I mean, the stories we've heard over the last couple of years, you know, he fell out of love with the game. He was spending more time with a fishing rod in his hand than he was with a golf club. He seems to have refound that love a little bit. Some people thinking that the bank manager might have forced him to refind that love, but we don't know what's quite going on behind the scenes. But he looks fully fit, and the form is bubbling away nicely. Similar to Thomas Peters, who we've mentioned, there's a lot of kind of 10th to 30th finishes. Not quite in contention just yet, but the form's there, and you know they've got the talent that they can just turn it on, especially in a field like this. So I'd really be keeping an eye on Victor Dubuisson, not just this week, but through the whole summer, and maybe for a run for the next Ryder Cup team as well.
Let's get a couple of picks then. Gordon, who'd you like this week? Our selections, as per usual, one outside of the top 50 from the race to Dubai last year and one from inside or outside. Give us your two.
Yeah, I can't go far away from Matt Wallace, defending champion. He's second at Hillside, then third at the major last week. I know there's some travel involved in that, but I think he's a driven man. Then a couple of nice sleeps and he'll be fine.
And alongside Matt Wallace, your second selection is...
Beefy. I haven't seen Beefy for a while. Andrew Johnson, I hope that he... is starting to return.
Has he had injuries?
just a little bit of a struggle with form, I think,
more than anything else,
splitting that time between the PGA Tour and the European Tour. I think
so hard, isn't it?
We know if you're not in the top 50 in the world and you don't get the exemptions into the majors and the WGCs, that's a really hard thing to balance.
It's very hard. So Beefy for me. Okay, I'd like to see him. Pick. He's a great character to be on the European Tour.
Kit, who do you like this week?
Jordan Smith is the man that stands out for me, a guy that I know incredibly well. I saw him in close quarters come through the Euro Pro Tour a few years ago. Then he absolutely romps to the Challenge Tour rankings, won the following season on the European Tour. He has finished as a high European in the USPGA Championship himself as well a couple of years ago when he finished tied ninth. His form is great coming into it. 7th, 14th, 5th and 6th in his last four starts. That is a win that is waiting to happen.
I'm going to go for Thomas Peters as my main selection. 23rd in the PGA, got an awful start, was 5 over through 3. A former winner, of course, at Himmelen. So he's my pick. And we need a second pick, of course, from Kit.
My outsider is going to be David Horsey. Retained his card by the skin of his teeth last season, but he has course form at Himmelen. A win and a second there before. He's a four-time European Tour winner, so he knows how to get it done. And he's coming in some sort of reasonably solid form. He's made his last five cuts. T30 in his last start at Hillside.
I'm going to go for Tapio Pulkkinen as my second pick. He's played well in Morocco recently, missed the cut, unfortunately, in the British Masters. Has got some form at Himmelen as well. Shot a 65 there in a Nordic Golf League event a few years ago. He would be my outsider. That wraps it up for today. We will have a full review of the Made in Denmark next week. Plus, we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, which is the Belgian Knockout. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Kit Alexander. Kit?
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on the show. And from Gordon Brand Jr.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Gordy. And from me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We will speak again soon.